Jennifer Burns, thank you so very much for being a part of the Grand Canyon Oral History Program. Today is January 16th, 2019. This oral history recording between you and me, Tom Martin, is happening at your house. Thank you so very much for letting us do this.
You're welcome.
And I'm just going to spell your name here for the transcriber, J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R, Burns, B-U-R-N-S. Thank you. Where should we start? What year were you born?
1955.
And where were you born?
I was born in Salem, Massachusetts.
What were your folks doing back there?
Well, they're dead.
I know, but what were they doing then?
What were they doing? Okay, so my folks actually met on Humphreys Peak. And my dad was in the Air Force, and he was stationed outside of Phoenix. My mom was working for a radio station in Phoenix, and so they met there. My sister was born in Phoenix, and then they moved back to where my dad's kind of ancestral home in Salem, Massachusetts.
So they were kind of outdoorsy people to start. I mean, they're hiking up San Francisco Peaks.
They were skiing, yeah. And so they would drive, you know, like every weekend from Phoenix up that old. Like, I have a map. I have a USGS map that doesn't even have Interstate 17 on it. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen that, yeah. Anyway, they would go through Jerome and blah, blah, blah. Wickenburg?
Was it? Yeah, yeah, it was a long
so
drive.
So they, as kids, there was three of us, living in Salem, Massachusetts, we would come to Arizona pretty much every year for a vacation because they loved Arizona and they had a lot of friends here. So that's how I got to really like Arizona.
So you had older brother, older sister,
older
younger?
Older sister, younger brother. Yeah.
Okay, all right. And would you guys do the typical American summer in the station wagon drive out from Massachusetts?
No, we would fly because my dad was a TWA pilot for his career after he got out of the Air Force. Although it was even before the Air Force was formed, it seemed like. But so yeah, he was a pilot, so we could fly all over the place. And that's what we did.
So would you then rent a car, or how would that?
Yeah, then we'd rent a car and we'd go out to, you know, it's one of those dude ranches, or we'd drive up to the Grand Canyon and go hiking into the canyon. Or
when was your first time at the Grand Canyon?
That's a good question. God, I was probably, it's probably like 13, 12 maybe. And I remember hiking down with my friend Lizzie Allen, also from Salem, Massachusetts, who we brought along. And I think we spent one night down there as a family. I don't even remember if we stayed at Phantom or what, but yeah, that had to be the first time.
So 1967, 68-ish?
Yeah, if you do the math.
And so your folks really like Arizona. Would you come out in the summertime or come out in the fall,
spring,
winter?
Spring. Yeah.
Okay. During spring break at school? And,
yeah.
Okay. And so as you were going back and forth between Massachusetts and Arizona, what were you thinking in your mind about where you kind of wanted to go?
Oh, I wasn't thinking about that at that time.
And,
at all.
Well, after high school, was it assumed that you and your older sister and younger brother would go to college? Was it your
yes,
parents
were
like?
Yes, it was assumed. Yes, they were absolutely dead set on that. Yeah. Yeah.
And so
I was into art. I was very much an artist, and went to art school, pretty much. Went to Skidmore. Went to Rhode Island School of Design. Went to a program in Copenhagen through Pratt Institute in New York for a semester or two. And then, so when I was a, so this is all back east, when I was a junior, I think, at RISD, my friend Connie and I did a little vacation and we went to the Grand Canyon because I wanted to, because I loved it. We also went to the Boyce Thompson Southwest Arboretum. Have you ever? Yeah.
In Phoenix?
Yeah. Well, Superior out there, yeah.
Okay.
So we went there because I had also done a little winter program through McAllister College, just a month with a bunch of scientists, which I was an art major, you know, and it was like a fish out of water. But anyway, so I found out about Boyce Thompson. And so we went there, and then we went and we hiked into the Grand Canyon, Connie and I, and we didn't get a permit. And so.
So this is 1975. Five-ish, 76-ish? And to hike into the Grand Canyon, of course, I mean, the first time you were in there was in the mid-60s. You know, Wes Hildreth and Jack Fulton were doing their walk way back then. That was the days of Colin Fletcher. And so that was kind of early journeying in there.
No, not really. I mean, we had backpacks and we knew we had to get a permit, but we didn't bother. So we hiked down in. I don't know if we went the Kaibab or the Bright Angel, but we went down and we actually slept in the campground, which was really stupid because then we got caught.
He didn't have a permit.
Yeah. By Phil Hecker, who is the ranger.
H-E-C-K-E-R. What do you remember about Phil?
That he was a really nice guy, really nice ranger. But he gave me a ticket. And also that night when we spent the night there, I think we must have... I don't know if we spent two nights. I can't see that we didn't because I was stung by a scorpion like on the neck in the middle of the night. And so when he gave us the ticket, like probably the next day, we went to his office and he said, oh yeah, that was a scorpion, blah, blah, blah. But we also hiked all the way to Ribbon Falls that day and back. And I remember tingly, you know how it is. But I also, like, I woke up in the night and I'm like, ah! And slapped that thing on my neck, and I just had the most intense pain. I thought, I'm going to die. And then I just fell asleep. So I woke up, and there was no pain, but there was, you know, the numbing sensation and stuff.
In your fingertips?
Fingertips. Both
hands?
Tongue, lips.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. So we got the ticket. So we, eventually, after we went to Ribbon Falls, we must have spent it. There's no way we hiked all the way out again, that day. So we... Phil must have let us stay. So we came out, and I was required to go in front of the judge on the south rim. So I went in front of the judge, and...
Do you remember the judge's name?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Older gentleman?
I would say that, yes.
Uh-huh.
I would say that.
Red nose?
I don't remember that.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, I was fined, and then during that episode, or visit... I applied for a job with Fred Harvey. And so we went back to RISD after a nice vacation. And I got a letter from Fred Harvey, which I think was Fred Harvey at the time. But anyway, saying, we are pleased to announce.
I'm just going to back up a bit to the judge for not paying the ticket or for not getting the permit. What was your fine?
25 bucks, something like that. It wasn't much, yeah.
Okay, and that
but
was.
But it was a hassle. I mean,
yeah.
Well, it would have been way more of a hassle if I had to go into Flagstaff to a judge. So I don't even think they have a judge on the South Rim anymore. Yeah.
No.
So that was quite the thing.
Okay, so. So you went to the judge, paid the $25 for the ticket, but didn't, like, that didn't phase you at all because you got for the application for the job there with Fred.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wish I could remember that lady's name who I applied with. She was very nice. So then back, I don't know, it was maybe a month later or something. So that was in the spring, and the letter said, we're pleased to offer you a job as a utility with Fred Harvey at Phantom Ranch. Because I think I said I will only work at Phantom Ranch. I'm pretty sure that's what I put on my...
And again, this would be 76-ish?
Yeah, I would say ish.
75, 76?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was the end of RISD. So I just left and went to Phantom Ranch and took a job as a maid.
How close were you to graduating?
Like a year.
Okay. And I mean, did you just like, that's nice, let's go do this new adventure. What were we thinking?
Oh yeah. I'm going west. I'm going to the Grand Canyon. Oh yeah. Nothing could compete with that, really.
And you got there in...
Even RISD, though, it took me two tries to get in, So, and my parents were like, yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah. They were very supportive of... Yes, very, very nice folks.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
So then, yeah, I think the summer was coming on, and basically I stayed a year working at Phantom Ranch
Okay.
and lived in one
Who
of the little cabins back
were you
there.
working with down there? Do you remember?
Terry Solar, Terry, wait, Terry, Terry Miche was the manager there. Yeah, I don't know if you ever knew Terry. She's passed away now.
What do you remember about her?
That she was a go-getter, a very much a.
How do you spell her last name?
Oh, Miche. I think it's MISHE. I think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go getter.
Yeah, and a real, kind of a hard-nosed manager, but super friendly, and I thought she was excellent, with the clientele and everything. So yeah, that's what I remember about her. It was good. It was good working there.
Tell me about your schedule, on-off schedule.
I think it was, like 10 days on, 4 days off kind of a thing. Hike out.
And where would you go? Did you have any housing when you hiked out?
I would go to the train station, which was at that point, George Marsick and Barry, God, I can't remember his last name. They had an outfitter guide, like touring company that was run out of the train station at that point.
Was this Grand Canyon Trail Guides?
It sounds like it, yeah.
Gaylord Stavely's concession?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so yeah, I was friend and I would just go, and there was a huge clawfoot bathtub there, and anyway, just crash there or, stay with friends on the rim, that kind of thing, or go down to Flagstaff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember the other team, the other people that you work with at FAM?
Well, Keith Green, of course, first day.
Tell me about Keith.
Met Keith the first day. We went around and made beds. What do you want to know about Keith?
I know nothing about Keith.
Have you entered?
So what can you tell me about Keith? What do you remember?
That he was a very nice guy, and that his eyesight was not that bad at the time, so he got around pretty good.
Was he wearing glasses
He was
then?
definitely wearing glasses, and he also
Okay.
had his little his magnifier that attaches to the side of his glasses so he could read.
Okay.
And I don't remember how long he'd been there, but he'd been there at least a year probably.
And he was working for Harvey too at the
Uh-huh.
time.
Yep. Same job more or less. Dave Tobin was the assistant manager.
Not Dan, but
And Dave or Dan, I didn't can't remember that. I don't think I worked there when Dan was there. I think Dan came
okay.
a little later.
All right.
Terry Solar. Yeah, Terry Solar, who later married Dan, worked there at the time.
Okay.
Yeah. Who else? Oh, Cindy Kane.
Canny, Kan.
Kane. Cindy Kane,
Okay.
great artist. Last I knew, she lived in on a boat in Manhattan, and was doing. In fact, if you Google her, you're going to see some incredible artwork. Yeah, so
Wow.
she was already doing art when she was working as a maid down there. And
What do you remember about her?
tall, blonde, gorgeous. Best friend. She was my best friend there. Yeah. So.
Did you talk art with her at the time?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I didn't do much art, but I did do some art. I remember now because I remember some photographs of myself actually sketching, so up Phantom Creek.
Okay. So did you do hiking at the time? You got 4 days off. Could you
Oh,
still base out of FAM
yeah,
and just
all
hike?
over, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Zoroaster?
No, I'm not a climber.
Okay.
I was never a climber, so I would go over to like Clear Creek. I remember going over to Clear Creek just by myself one time, and then hiking down the drainage, and a big storm came in. It was like Thanksgiving, and I was like freaked out because, yeah, I thought it was gonna flash flood. But up Phantom and over, and then that great hike. You go up Phantom and you go over the top and you come down into Bright Angel Campground. That
Piano Alley.
yeah, it's great. That was so our go-to place was up Phantom Creek, basically.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, did a lot.
Who do you remember who the Phantom Ranch Ranger was at the time?
Well, Dave Actually, no. Dave Buccello was later when I was, because I later became the Cottonwood Ranger as a student conservation aide, as a volunteer ranger, more or less. And Dave Buccello, well, actually, Dave wasn't the ranger then either. When I was a resource management specialist for Grand Canyon, Dave Buccello was the ranger down at Phantom. So who is the ranger? I don't remember.
There was a gentleman named Bob Cornelius, but he probably
Oh,
left
yeah,
about
I know. He,
72, 73.
thinking he wasn't.
Okay. All right. So Keith's there, Terry, Dave, and Cindy, and Terry Michie is kind of managing everybody. And the River Runners are coming and going during that time in 75. They've all become concessionaires. The management plan for the river management plan is going to happen in the late 70s. But they didn't interface that much with you all. You were busy up at the ranch, I'm just assuming here, is that right? And of course,
Yeah.
after the summer, there was nobody there. I mean, all winter long. But
Mostly we, so hey, just to backtrack a tiny bit, when I was down there with my parents that one time, we did go to Phantom, because I remember the swimming pool was just being filled in.
67-ish, okay, for you being 12 or 13.
Yeah, and they were just throwing all kinds of stuff in there and then burying it, you
Like
know.
what?
Like, I remember silverware going in there, furniture. Yeah. So, anyway.
There's a good archaeological dig there
Yes,
someday.
there is. Yeah. Yeah.
Did that strike you as being odd? Or, you're,
No.
yeah, okay.
No, I had no frame of reference whatsoever, you know. But you know, the bunkhouse was not there. And actually, when I worked down there, the bunkhouse was had not been built yet. So we all stayed in cabins, and there were tent tops where the dorms are now. They were all canvas-sided tent tops.
Okay.
So while I worked down there, there was a huge project to reconstruct those into the dorms, the hard-sided dorms, and also to build the employee housing that is now like the first thing that you see when you yeah. So,
And so this would have been the summer 76-ish, 76, 77. Okay. Roughly, I'm just trying to,
Sure,
timestamp that,
yeah.
okay, that this construction was going on. Helicopter flights in and out to
Lots of
carry all the
helicopter
gear,
flights, yep.
bringing in lumber and,
Construction workers,
yep, okay.
yeah. Got a ride on some of those flights,
Did
yeah.
you? To get a ride out or get a ride in
Oh,
or?
saw a sky crane come in one time, or maybe multiple times, but yeah, ooh, that was impressive.
Wow, and what was it carrying? Something heavy.
You know, I think it was working on the sewage treatment plant, bringing
Oh,
something in.
okay. All right.
The plant. No, just
Which
kidding.
had to have been built at around that time, I suppose.
Yeah. Anyway, where were we?
Well, we were just
We're
talking about
trying to move forward.
the construction of construction that you saw when you were there.
No, you were asking me about rangers, what
Well, when
rangers
we
we
talk about
get.
the river
Oh,
and of course, who the rangers were.
So mostly we were aware more of the dudes who were coming down on the mules. Yeah, that was that and hikers. So, people who were actually coming to the lemonade window and were getting sandwiches, or the people who were coming and having meals at the ranch itself.
And by 1976, the incredible crush of people at the Phantom Ranch campground that was happening in the late 60s had totally been quieted down by the implementation of this permit system.
Right.
And so when you started working for Phantom, all that in theory was more or less
Do you remember that? When people were just
only that I
camping
have learned, only
everywhere?
that I, what I have
Yeah.
learned, talking to
Yeah.
others who worked there at the time and the stories they told me.
Yeah. No, that was completely over. Yeah, everything was very controlled.
Okay, and kind of controlled and orderly, I guess, if you will, in quotes. Do you have any other interesting recollections of that first year? You worked there for a full year, it sounds like, through the winter, spring, summer, fall. Any other recollections of that time?
This guy named Grizzly. Do you know who I'm talking about? Yeah,
John Martini.
Martini. Yeah, he was my boyfriend at the time. So he was. I don't think he was working at Phantom. I don't think he was working when I was there. Yeah, because I remember seeing him on the
So
road.
he was a driver for Supertrash up
Okay.
at Tucson
That's,
for a
yeah.
while.
Right, with Bob Sutton.
Yeah, with Bob
Yeah.
Sutton. Would that have been that time frame? Okay, all right. What was Grizz like as a guy to hang out with?
Oh, he's really nice guy. You know, in retrospect, I think, well, he grew up on the island of Aruba, and I think he was always on Aruba time, you know, so he was just really mellow and laid back. Just super nice guy.
Nice. Okay. And so while you were working for Fred Harvey, you must have been aware that there was a National Park Service there. Couldn't kind of avoid them, clearly. It is Grand Canyon National Park. What were your thoughts about the Park Service at the time?
Not much.
Okay.
Didn't think much about the Park Service.
Okay.
My world was, to me, it was like going to the University of Phantom because I had been a very serious student, albeit an art student, but but anyway, I was, you know, really serious student and didn't party much. But when I went and worked at Phantom, it was like totally different situation, you know, scene. I mean, there was just a lot of hilarity and a lot of fun, a lot of fun. Yeah.
So collegial camaraderie
So
of the team there.
yeah, of the team there.
Nice. Yeah, that's
Yeah, if you want to turn the tape around, I can tell you more, but I'm not gonna.
later.
Yeah.
I'll write a little note here. Tell me later.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, as I said, there was more interaction like with the guides, the mule train guides, you know, than with the rangers, just because the rangers are, just remember rangers coming through, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who exactly. You know, I remember Wayne Ranney. He was a ranger at the time. Actually,
Okay.
he's the one I do remember. And so yeah, he would come up and of course say hello and everything, but I know there were other ones and I can't remember who they were. And I didn't go to the ranger station. I don't remember going there much or really seeing it or spending much time there as I did when I was working at Cottonwood, you
Sure,
know.
because then
So another person was Roy Starkey.
tell me about
So
Roy,
he
please.
was there. And so he, of course, was working for USGS doing his stuff, and then he was the maintenance guy for Phantom.
Oh, he
And
was.
yeah, so
Okay.
he was totally the maintenance guy for Phantom Ranch. And he was busy all the time.
I bet.
You know, and he lived in that back cabin, kind of behind me. I was in a little cabin that was right behind the lodge, and then he was in one even a little bit further back, that you would encounter. If you were coming down from the north rim, it would be the first cabin that you. I don't even think you could see it because it was, you know, vegetated and stuff. But oh, he had a great, great, beautiful spot there. So no, he was just a super, super great guy, and you
Did you
know.
get a chance to ride with him out on the cable car out across the river?
I did go out on it once, and it must have been with him. I can't imagine who else it was. Yeah. But
And he
yeah.
would drop at the marks on the cable, he would drop his little
Yeah.
torpedo down there and fill the little bottle with fluid and bring it back up and put the bottle in the milk little cradle
Yeah,
of,
I don't remember that.
okay. What else do you remember about him?
That he always wore a little, you know, jeans and a little work shirt, and he had very white hair, and he wasn't reclusive. He was just, you know, that was his life, was down there, basically. And so, you know, he was one of the real constants of Phantom Ranch.
So it was
And he was well
almost.
respected for his talents in maintenance, you know.
Yeah, I can't believe that he was able to actually do his sediment drying, weighing, measuring job, and take care of the maintenance requirements of Phantom Ranch. That would have been quite a lot of work for for one guy to take a handle on. Wow.
Yeah, I don't remember him ever getting stressed out or being a grumpy guy or anything like that. He was just kind of quiet, but just always there and always pleasant. And just upstream of the cable car is what's called Roy's Beach. Yeah, so we would always go up to Roy's Beach, not with Roy, but Cindy and I would go hang out up there, between shifts, because you'd have basically two shifts during the day, so very early. And then after the dudes came in, you'd have like a dinner shift or something.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have time in between to go run around or go up Phantom Creek.
So were you cooking? Was the rotation through?
Everything,
You kind of did everything. You mm-hmm. you'd clean the beds, you'd clean the bathrooms, you'd help cook the food, you'd help wash the dishes, do the laundry.
Yeah.
Just cycle through all those different chores.
Yeah, sometimes be the assistant manager. At some point, I remember being the manager, just acting manager, briefly. But yeah, you do everything.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Any other Roy stories before we move on? And was that beach up there, upstream of the gauge, was that called Roy's Beach then?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, that was Roy's Beach.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Was it bigger then than it is now?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It was definitely bigger. In fact, the last trip I was looking, I was like, where is Roy's Beach? And I couldn't really even see that there was Roy's Beach there.
Isn't that interesting?
I'm not sure. It's been chewed away.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Did you get wrapped into any rescues of overheated hikers or tourists that were sick or any things like that that were happening at the time?
The only thing I remember, the only one I remember, because the answer is generally no. We would just stay out of the way, basically. But I remember, and I can't remember if this was when I was a Cottonwood Ranger or working there for Phantom, but I remember this guy coming in who, I'm trying to think of, this boat came down, and it was a commercial trip, and it was a private trip, and they were all freaked out because they had some injuries in Hants, but they had to hurry down through Hants, actually, is maybe why some people were injured by ammo cans flying around and stuff, and broken ankle maybe, because this guy, they had lost a guy at the Little Colorado. And they had seen the guy float downstream, and then they immediately, got on the water and started searching and came right. I think they had to spend a night, though, and then they came into Phantom. But anyway, so for some reason, maybe I was the ranger at Cottonwood, because somebody told me to stay down by the river and watch, whatever. Well, here comes this trip. It's a motor trip, and this guy is on the trip and had been picked up. So what had happened was this guy was... they were all at the Little Colorado, and I'm always like, don't you be driving down by the river. Anyway, this guy had eaten some datura, and it was an all-guys trip, it was a private trip. This guy had eaten some datura, he had tripped out, he had decided to throw himself into the river, he had decided to go across the river. And so he had thrown himself in the river maybe three times trying to get across the river or something. That's what he was telling me. And then he got swept away. But he got out of the river shortly. But he was tripping like his brains out or something. And so he got separated from his trip. And then they couldn't find him. So they decided, they needed to head downstream. They didn't see him for some reason. And so he was stranded in his little shorts overnight. And then begged a commercial trip to take him, because they were, according to him, they didn't really even want to pick him up, down to Phantom. So that was basically the happy ending.
So was his group still at Phantom? He was able to reconnect with them?
Yes, I think his group was still at Phantom. And I think that they flew him out. I don't think they allowed him to continue. Yeah, because then they were also flying the injured out.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting to, you know, this commercial trip pulls up and they shove this guy off, you know, this is the guy. Did you have a nice trip? Actually, he said it was the most incredible experience of his life.
Wow.
Being on the day tour, this whole spending the night by himself on the river
and not drowning.
It had to be, yeah, not drowning, and it had to be summer, because otherwise, you know, it froze. Yeah.
And of course, there were other trips down there that, you know, he ran a commercial motor trip, and if it wasn't summer, they wouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, but I think that probably wasn't why I was an employee at Phantom, because I would have been hanging out at Roy's Beach and wouldn't have seen any, participated in any of that.
So how did you transition from Fred Harvey then to the Park Service?
So then I, after a year at Phantom, I decided it was time to go back to school. So I got into the resource. The resource management program at the University of Arizona in Tucson. And I started going to school there, and I applied.
So I'm just thinking, now you were a year out from graduating in an art degree. How did you shift to resource management?
Oh, yeah, I think I was pretty confused, because I think I wanted to be a veterinarian all of a sudden. And so I went to school in science, and I think that was when, well, no, it wasn't. Anyway, I went to school in science or biology, and then pretty quick I got into resource management, which the school's really good for. And yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in wildlife, thanks to my mother. Mainly, who was a birder, you know. So that's the other great love of, you know, so there's art, and then there's science, biology, whatever. So, yeah, so I slid into that. During that time, I applied for, I saw a posting for a co-op position. Yeah, I'm not going to get the dates. A co-op position with the Park Service, and I ended up getting a position with... Chiricahua National Monument, out there by Wilcox, you know.
So can you tell me a little bit more about the what a co-op position is? That's new to me.
Yeah, so a co-op position is, it's different now. It's called something different now for the Park Service and the U.S. Forest Service, but it's an entry-level position. It's a way that, it's a hiring system, or a hiring what do they call it? It's one of those ways that they can hire students, and then the student will have an opportunity to be hired in a permanent full-time position, non-competitively, once they fulfill all their obligations.
Once you graduate,
and
then.
So it's a really rare, really great opportunity. It's kind of like people in the Peace Corps. You know, when you go into the Peace Corps and then you get out, you have like a year's non-competitive status with the government, where that people can hire you in the government. You can be hired without even a position being posted, you know. So the same thing with the co-op. So they're very rare, and they weren't so rare then. They're much rarer now that, you know, government's being squeezed. So anyway, I was really lucky to get it because I was the only one with any Park Service experience. And so I'm thinking, I had that SCA position before I applied for this job. Because I was the only one with over a 2.0 GPA and had a little bit of rangering experience under my belt with the Cottonwood Campground Ranger as an SCA. So I think I spent, right after Phantom, I think I spent like a season being the Cottonwood Campground Ranger.
So,
as a student conservation aide.
Okay.
That's what SCA is. And so, you know, they basically, it's a really great program, just like, but it's not a government program. It's kind of like a nonprofit student conservation association, and they, like AZCC, Arizona Conservation Corps, or American Conservation Experience, all these groups, you know, try to take youth and get them experienced in protected area management. So,
if you were thinking, okay, I'm going to go back to school, and I'm going to go to the U of A, and I'm kind of thinking about being a vet, I have all these credits from art, so they're going to come in, but I'm going to have my summers off. So it's going to take a number of years, I guess is what I'm thinking, to get a degree. And so I'm going to take my summers, I'm going to run back to Grand Canyon, and that would make sense that that first summer maybe you were at Phantom Ranger?
I think I was just thinking, you know, I really liked the Grand Canyon, but I wanted to, I wanted to, you know, maybe I talked to somebody who was an SCA or something, and I know, yeah, and so I was intrigued in it, by it, and I also knew I didn't want to stay at Phantom anymore. You know, I was ready to go back and do something else.
Okay.
Go back to school. And
So then before you got sent to the Chiricahua, you spent a season, would be a summer then, I'm assuming, at Indian Gardens.
Cottonwood.
At Cottonwood. Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Cottonwood, of course, is between the North Rim and Phantom Ranch, about halfway, 7 miles this way and 7 miles that way, more or less. Now, upstream of you a little ways toward the North Rim would have been Roaring
Bruce
Springs
Aiken.
And Bruce Aiken and Mary.
And Mary
and the
all
kids.
The kids, yeah.
So what do you remember about?
But, well, we had a lot of interaction. We had a lot of fun, yeah. I mean, it was great knowing them. Yeah, I did a lot of hiking with both Bruce and Mary. And remember, you know, spending time with the kids. And that was before they reconstructed their house. So it was really beautiful. Really beautiful there.
1978-ish?
Maybe. Sorry.
Okay. Just trying to keep the timeline sort of close here.
But when I was the ranger there, it was great. It was so great. I do remember a few incidences. Anyway, one time I was down at Ribbon Falls and I encountered this guy who had spent the night at Ribbon Falls. And of course that's, you know, not allowed. And so I wrote him a warning. I could only write warnings. I didn't have, you know, I wasn't a cop. So I wrote him a warning. He basically made it into a little paper airplane and flew it off, you know, just flew it off the dome there or whatever. And he said, "I'm a poet. And I need to be, I should be able to go anywhere, be anywhere, and do anything, basically, for my own inspiration." It's just like, yeah, okay, that's great. Interesting. I had a case of kid who was stung by a scorpion and had a bad reaction. So, yeah, he was flown out. That was, you know, that wasn't that uncommon to have people have to be flown out.
Did you have a radio?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I was just like a ranger.
Okay.
Except I couldn't write tickets.
And no weapon.
And no weapon.
Okay.
Yeah. Thankfully, no weapon.
Right. Well.
Yeah. So there was a time when there were, well, there's always beavers who lived there at, well, up and down the, you know, Bright Angel and Colorado, of course, but there are like residence beavers there at Cottonwood, and, you know, they were chewing away some of the trees in the campground, and the head rangers, you know, they got really concerned about this, or resource management did or something, and so they asked me to trap the beavers. So I ended up trapping two beavers, which, believe it or not, was really easy to trap these beavers.
What would you do with them? They're big, they're big teeth.
These giant clamshell live traps that you set, you know, basically you get some, you know, it's castor, it's beaver castorum, right? It's the scent of the beaver that they get from dead beavers. But anyway, so, you know, you make a little break in their dam right there in the campground area and set the big trap there. And then, you know, they go to check it out and boom, they're, you know, caught, but they don't drown. So I had these two, so I trapped two of them, and I had them in a, you know, place where I kept the garbage, which was like a big sunken culvert kind of a thing. And then I had to put them in gunny sacks because this is so ridiculous, because we were going to fly them all the way down the freaking river someplace and let them go, you know, relocate them at great expense. And so I had to put them in gunny sacks, which I did, which was funny. The beavers, you know, beavers are not very aggressive, and I just remember picking them up by their tails, which probably wasn't the best thing to do, and putting them in these gunny sacks. And then putting them over there at the helispot, you know, two gunny sacks, going back in, having a cup of coffee, waiting for the helicopter, and then, you know, the chopper's on the way, so I go out, and I'm like, oh my God, where are the gunny sacks? And so these beavers in the gunny sacks had, they must have heard the water, and so they humped their way down to the water's edge. And I just remember that they were about, at least one of them, about to, you know, like tumble in the sack into the creek and probably drown, whatever. So yeah, I gathered them up, and here comes a helicopter. We put them in the helicopter. I got in the helicopter, which was awesome. I did a lot of flying, which I did much more flying later. But so then we flew all the way down the Bright End. All then get on the river. We go all the way down. Like we went down to like someplace like Forrester. And
wow.
Landed and let these poor beavers go. And I remember as we're taking off, seeing these beavers, they're basically heading away from the river. And then I saw them turn around, and at least one of them got in the river, and it was like, you know, swimming and inexorably being sucked down into some rapid that was there, which I'm sure didn't matter to them. But, you know, beavers are very territorial, pretty sure. Then they wouldn't really make it, you know, yeah. So later, you know, we ended up putting wire around the trees and protecting the trees, and I think that's pretty much the way they manage beavers today, because it's ridiculous you'd be trapping till the cows come home.
So. Beavers are a fascinating survivor.
They're great.
They survived the dam, they survived the Park Service, and all kinds of other people after getting rid of them, the Spanish and all the frontiersmen, James Ohio Patty and all these people.
Yeah, they're so soft. I was so... honored to be able to touch one alive. Just so, God, her fur was just amazing. And then all they do is just hiss, like, it's this little tiny soft hiss at me when I was picking them up and putting them in the, So I remember finding some marijuana growing along the stream there. That was another thing, you know.
This was 1978.
Somebody planted it or whatever. Not a big marijuana grow, like, you know, later we certainly got on the National Forest. And that sort
sure.
of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, I remember eavesdropping on some, I was in my room or something, the ranger station, and on some people who believed that the Grand Canyon was created in six or 8 days, or, you know, whatever that belief, that's kind of a fundamentalist Christian kind of, yeah, they were talking about that, and I was just like, wow. Never heard that before. But it was great. It was a really great job.
So backpackers would stumble in and spend the night and crawl away in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Or they would show up. Were you pretty busy? Was the campground pretty full then?
No. Kind of on and off. Not really. No.
Okay. All right.
It's very mellow, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so again, 10 days on, 4 off,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing, but maybe with some sort of housing on the rim? Park, something?
I don't remember any housing on the rim. No.
Okay. And then weekends in Flagstaff, were you still hanging with Grizz at the time?
No, I don't think so.
Uh-huh. Okay. Were you still friends with the Phantom people? So when you were hiking in and out,
you
just stop in and say hi
definitely.
To Terry and,
uh-huh.
and Keith and...
And Roy.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Cool.
Yeah.
And who do you remember as who would have been your boss? Do you remember any of the other law enforcement people that you would have reported to at all?
Stan
Stockton?
Yes, thank you. I remember Stan.
What do you remember about Stan?
I don't think Stan was my boss.
Okay.
God, you'd think I remember who my boss was, but I just remember Stan was also a very nice guy and doing a lot with the stock. Like he was in charge of the mules for the Park Service, yeah. Packing stuff in and out for the rangers, you know.
So Stan had a mentality where if he found a hiker without a permit,
mm-hmm.
he wouldn't give him a ticket. He'd say, when you're done with your hike, go to the backcountry office and get a permit and go home. I mean, he was friendly. He had a way of telling people about this and that. Did he, did that wear off on you as a Park Service employee dealing with other Park Service people? He wasn't He wasn't the kind of fellow you ran into at Indian Gardens that said, "I'm going to give you a ticket. You need to go see the judge on the rim."
Yeah. No, I don't remember any training that I got, come to think of it. I don't remember anything. I just did the best I could, yeah.
Do you have any other Stan Stockton stories?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So that was the summer. Then it was back to school again.
Yeah, then it was back to school in Tucson. And then I applied for that co-op position. And then I got the job working resource management at... I was working interpretation.
Well, hang on a second. Let's back up a bit. So the concept of going to the U of A for vet school means you need a lot of science and all that other stuff. But eventually you're going to morph that into resource management.
Mm-hmm. Pretty quickly.
Okay.
Pretty quickly I was like, oh, no, I'm not going to be a veterinarian.
Okay.
I'm going to be a wildlife biologist. Something like that.
Okay. Then you mentioned the Chiricahuas. And was that another summer position again? You mentioned the student,
student conservation, well,
the
no,
co-op.
So the co-op, yeah.
Yeah.
The Park Service Cooperative Education Program. So that would, yeah, so working summers,
mm-hmm.
and working vacations like over Christmas or whatever. Working any chance, any time I could give them, that's when I would work. Yeah.
Okay. And so it was about that time, after the stint in Cottonwood, the summer in Cottonwood, then the Chiricahuas came along?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the Chiricahuas is this sky island in this hot desert either
mm-hmm.
side of it
mm-hmm.
with
beautiful.
Wonderful granite and big pine trees at the top.
Yeah.
And out in the middle of the southern Arizona desert.
Yeah.
Next to the Mexican border.
South of Wilcox, yeah.
Yeah, south mm-hmm. of Wilcox. And what do you remember about that?
Well, I worked for a guy named Paul Fugate, who, F-U-G-A-T-E, who later, after I left there, disappeared and was never found. He was the chief interpretive ranger. And he was an amazing guy. He was really, really good at his job. And he, you know, he had long hair. He was a hippie. And he had been fired pretty much for his hair. And then he had challenged the Park Service, and he had gotten reinstated with all of his back pay and blah, 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 blah. That was well before when I got there. So when he disappeared, you know, there was some thought that somebody was, you know, the Park Service was like taking revenge or something. But actually, the theory is that he ran into some drug deal, something, and was taken away and thrown down, you know, one of those little chasms there and never to be found. So, but anyway, that happened like probably the year after I left, after I graduated. I wasn't working there. Although I was about to leave my Volkswagen, I was about to go to South America and work with some people who ran the Urubamba River in Peru and do some river training, guide training down there. And I was leaving my Volkswagen, actually at Paul's house, when his friend of his called and told me that he had disappeared. So that was really, really bizarre. And, you know, I just got contacted, like, within the last year. They had reopened his case. Contacted by the Park Service police, and you know, of course, there's nothing new that I could tell them. But, and I don't know what new they had found out that triggered that reopening.
Huh.
But yeah, it's an open case. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
so
yeah.
Were you? What were your duties at Chiricahua? What did
so
you do?
So I lived in the, I think it was called the Sugarloaf Lookout. So it wasn't an active fire lookout, but you would hike like a half a mile up this to the top of the Sugarloaf Mountain. And it was this beautiful little on-the-ground lookout tower. It wasn't a tower, it was just a little lookout house. And I had that as my quarters. I was so lucky. And I would come down every day, and I was an interpretive ranger, so I'd do interpretive programs in the campground. And I was also doing resource management. It was kind of a bit of everything as a co-op student. It was a super good job. Yeah, so I was helping Paul, helping the rangers, I did, for example, a peregrine falcon survey of Cochise, you know, the Cochise of that area.
How many falcons did you see there?
Oh, I don't remember.
Were there just a few, or were there a lot?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah. Trying to think of what other duties. I do remember one time I was driving my little Volkswagen down the hill going to work, and this fawn darted out, paralleled me for a split second, dove under my tire, and I ran over it.
Oh.
So ran back. It was alive, picked it up, and it had a broken back or something, and just like, anyway, I'm there, like, looking at it, and I look up, I'm in my full uniform, I look up, and here comes a tour bus, and up the road, you know, and I'm like, oh no, this is bad optics, but it was empty, it was just the driver, you know. Anyway, I put the fawn in my trunk, took it down to the ranger station, and the ranger, chief ranger, took it out and shot it, so
yeah.
That was really bad.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's very hard.
It was beautiful there. It was just a really, and the monsoons would, you know, be happening, and there were just a lot of waterfalls, and you know, it was a beautiful kind of oak woodland there. Not a lot of visitors, very quiet place.
When I think of monsoon season in a lookout, I think of the lookout ranger perched on a chair with insulators trying to avoid the lightning strikes on the building.
Yeah, and I just remember a lot of incredible sunsets up there. You know, just wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So today the concept of the wall and illegal aliens is big on everybody's radar screen. Back then in the late 1970s, still there were people crossing. The border was fairly porous. There were border patrol people around. Did you ever see any of that? Did you?
No.
Uh-huh.
No.
Okay.
And, you know, Chiricahua National Monument, surrounded by Chiricahua National Forest, is it's not the first thing that you would come to over the border, right? So that's a bit insulated by the forest itself.
It's further north, it's further up. And if I was just trying to go north to Chicago, I would get on the road, I wouldn't go up on the mountains.
Yeah. So... No, didn't.
Okay.
Didn't have any of that.
Any other? Now this is a wilderness area. Wilderness Act passed in 1964, and so this is the late 1970s. And Chiricahua National Monument, I think, does have wilderness designation.
Oh yeah.
Did that factor into your management consciousness at all at the time?
No, no. Uh-uh.
Okay. All right. Do you know who the monument
manager was?
Who would have been a manager, or
no.
Whether they were even called a superintendent at the time, I'm not sure.
I think they were, and no, I don't remember who that was, but I remember driving them home one time from a public meeting, and I got, like, I thought I was driving a stick shift, but I wasn't. I was driving an automatic, and I slammed on, like, I went to put the clutch in, and in front of his house, to drop him off or something in a government vehicle, and I just like slammed on the brakes, and yeah, anyway, I do remember that. I remember he was a nice guy. I don't think I had much interaction really with that guy. Yeah.
So for groceries, it would be run down to Bisbee or up to
Wilcox.
Wilcox,
yeah.
So the northern end of the Chiricahuas, no, yeah, is a mountain range called the Dos Cabezas.
Yeah.
And there is a long-term family up there called the Clumps. Did that?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Nope.
Because if you knew Clump stories, I wanted to hear those. And of course, the Wilcox Playa was there.
Oh, yeah.
A big dry lake. Did you get out on the playa at all? And
no, but I did. I got my pilot's license there from this guy named Marvin Motes, who lived in Wilcox, and he was a Motes, Marvin. He was a he, you know, flew an ag truck, as they call them. He was an agricultural sprayer, right? So he had crashed like numerous times. He was a character and a great pilot. And we ran out of gas one time, actually, in the air. And I'm just like, hey, it's yours. you were the one who didn't want to fill the tank up before we left. Yeah.
So where did you land?
So we just landed right back at the airport. We were doing, you know,
just dead stick down, and that was that. And,
yeah.
And the little propeller's going, no power coming out of it.
Yeah, so anyway, I got to fly around over the playa quite a bit.
What got you into wanting to get a pilot's license?
Because my dad was a pilot.
Okay.
Right? So he taught me how to fly, actually, on the East Coast. And I just needed to finish up, get the license.
How much time did you put in with Marvin?
I don't know. I mean, probably 40 hours, maybe.
Okay.
30 hours.
Okay.
Good amount of time.
And then did you solo?
Oh, yeah. I did my first cross-country solo where I flew up over, you know, I feel like it was Mount Graham. Like, I flew up and over. It was the windiest day of, it was ridiculous. I never should have been flying. And I was the only, I flew to Safford. And it was the only plane that had landed, like, so far that day. And I literally came down like this because I was into the wind, you know, and it was...
Just sort of straight down with a little bit of forward motion, but not much.
And when I went up that high, I thought I was going to pass out. And I remember saying to myself, do not pass out. This is, you know, if ever you were not going to pass out, this would be the time, you know. Cause
so you would have been at 10,000, 11,000 feet, something like that, to clear the Mount Graham. Is it 9,000 something, isn't it? So
I was like, going over, and just like, I should turn around.
Were you like heading to Safford or something?
Yeah.
What was your out and back?
Yeah,
okay.
Just over to Safford. That was it. That was my cross country, you know. So I did it, and check.
Wow.
Yeah.
In a little Cessna something? Or
a little Cessna something, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe a little two-seater. Yeah.
Tail driver?
That he had. No, I never flew a tail driver.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fun. What else were you doing down there in the Chiricahuas? So flying? So you go to Wilcox for food?
That's all, yeah. Just working. Yeah. Hiking around.
And
there was no wine tasting. There were no wine. There were no, you know, vineyards or anything, you know, at that time.
And cranes. That,
you know, I never went over to see the sandhill cranes and that, but I'm sure they were. Yeah, I'm sure they were there. Don't you think? Yeah.
I'm not sure at the time.
And Portal, you know, Portal was going. The Southwest Research Station, you know, that was a big deal.
Did you go down there? Did you?
Never went over. I think I might have gone over there once when I was working there.
Did you go down to Knight Cienega, that area down there near Sierra Vista, down that side at all?
No, really didn't.
Okay.
Didn't really even go to Bisbee until much later.
Okay. All right.
Just back and forth, U of A to the job, you know.
Okay.
Wilcox.
Mm-hmm.
In the air, whatever.
And so at this point, it seems like you're getting close to graduating.
Yeah.
You're in this program that is tying you in with the Park Service. Were you pretty happy with how things were going that way?
Yeah, so then what happens is basically, you know, when you're getting close to graduation, when you're getting close to graduation, you start looking for a permanent position. So you're kind of marketing yourself to different parks to see, you know, if anybody has a position, if they're interested. So at that point, I was, you know, qualified to be a resource management specialist. And so I ended up getting a seasonal job, actually, at Lassen Volcanic National Park as a resource management specialist. And then while I was there, I was offered a position when Larry May was the chief of resources at Grand Canyon, offered me a position as a resource management specialist at Grand Canyon, permanent full-time.
Okay, let's back up a bit, because I realized I forgot something, which is boats.
Boats, yeah.
When did you start getting interested in boats and boating?
So I went to Outward Bound when I graduated from high school that summer. I went to Outward Bound, and it was the first summer that they had Outward Bound on the Rio Grande. And it was a disaster for
This
Outward
is the Rio Grande in
Bound.
Big Bend,
Yes.
in
And
the
so they had Outward
desert, a
Bound.
tight canyon twisting lots of rocks
So they
and.
had Outward Bound in the Rio Grande, in Big Bend, right? So there was, everything. Like, there's camping, there's, climbing at the mouth of Santa Elena Canyon. There's boating, there's rafting. Only it was paddle rafting that we did. And so I learned how to, I was fascinated. And I'd always been a canoer, as my parents were canoers and stuff, so.
So back up a bit because, from Massachusetts.
And my father was a sailor, so, and we lived on the coast, so we were always sailing and stuff.
All right, so this,
Always
so
in the
you
water.
have, could you swim well? Did you like swimming?
Oh, yeah, it was a water
Okay,
baby.
okay. So then you came into it with a little more than the average bear because you were comfortable around water. And if you were canoeing, you knew actually how to read water if you weren't in a lake and you were on a river.
Right, and we spent a lot of time on lakes, but and a lot of time sailing, but we also spent time canoeing down local rivers, especially the Ipswich River, which was kind of our go-to there in Salem. Ipswich being nearby. So yeah, I
Okay, so then in Outward Bound, it's a paddle boat. So there's one person in the back with a little paddle as a rudder to steer the thing, and the person in the back is shouting orders to the poor people in the front who are either doing
Well, actually,
forward,
it was the
backwards.
Outward Bound instructors who were pretty much in a canoe with a chicken tied to the gunwales or something.
For dinner,
Well, I think for
or.
dinner, but I don't remember them ever actually killing the chicken. And so then us, Outward Bounders were, two and two on either side of this paddle raft. And
With nobody steering in the
no,
back. Okay.
no,
So you're
just
having to
doing
talk
it,
to
yeah.
your mates right on the other side of the boat
Yeah.
there, forward, back, right, left.
Yeah, and I think we just ran Santa Elena Canyon. And so, after that,
So when I think of the Rio Grande and I think of Santa Elena Canyon, this is this tight limestone canyon with these boulders. And if the water's low, you have to turn the
Oh,
boat
it's
up
crazy, yeah. It was
sideways to
fantastic.
get between the boulders. And it's gorgeous. The sunrise, sunset is really, really pretty down
Yeah.
there. But really?
Yeah,
Santa Elena
I know,
Canyon?
I know. Well, so the first day of this Outward Bound trip, I think one person, maybe two people, passed out from the heat and like heat stroke, basically, because these Outward Bound instructors had never had a class, and this was the summer, freaking Big Bend, right? And so they were really figuring it out, and I think maybe they changed up. I met an Outward Bound instructor who was part of that initial Big Bend push, and we were laughing hilariously about this. Was like in the last couple of years I met
Oh
somebody,
my gosh.
and I was talking we were talking about this and how they were, and I don't think they do Big Bend anymore. Yeah, no, it was, for me, it was great. I loved it, and I loved that I learned also how to camp in the desert. So, no bare bones camping, throw down an Ensolite and just sleep. No tent, no nothing, just, yeah. It
Well, when
was
it's 110, it's pretty easy. You don't need a
great.
tent and all that other junk.
I totally
Yeah.
did, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Then did you get into kayaking at one point
So
or?
then when I was going to school at U of A, I bought this piece of crap life raft that was military life raft, which you've probably seen these. It was like a 15 footer, but it had like those double tubes. Yeah, and they're thin as paper. And so I think I carved off that upper tube, and then I turned the boat into a barge. And some friends and I, because I liked the Rio Grande, some friends and I, including Wayne, was on this trip, and Grizzly, and Terry Soler, and Dan Tobin. Trying to think who else. I think it was six of us. We went for 2 weeks on the Rio Grande. We did the entire thing from Colorado Canyon, I think it is Colorado, from La Jitas basically, all the way through Boquillas Canyon to the end, in 2 weeks in the winter. And we we
With
made,
the ice now.
oh, ice, you're like breaking through the ice in the buckets there. It was cold and it was windy and it was crazy. But yeah, so that taught me a lot, and I really liked rafting.
So not so much kayaking, but more.
Not so much kayaking. You know, I really think I got into kayaking when I met Glenn Rink and did some kayaking with him, yeah.
Which would have been in the 80s then?
It would have been when I think I met Parsons first, and he came up to visit me. I was living on Apache Street working for resource management. Yeah, in the 80s, right? 80 to
So
85.
this woman, yeah, 80 to 85.
And I
Yeah.
met
Okay.
LB, little buddy, and yeah, and then I think I learned how to kayak after that,
Okay.
yeah.
Maybe this is a good place to wrap up part one. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think
Is
that's
there,
good.
okay, is there anything else before we do the final wrap up of part one that you want to put into this section that we haven't talked about?
No,
Okay.
no.
All right.
No,
Cool.
it's like
Well,
fun.
today is January 16th, 2019. This is the end of part one, Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Jennifer Burns. And Jennifer, thank you so very much.
You're welcome, Tom.